The developer ecosystem stories this week have a thematic undercurrent that I find worth naming explicitly: the question of credit, authenticity, and what it means to produce original work in an era of AI generation tools. Let's start with the most charged one.
The story titled, "Hey Nico, You Didn't Vibe Code Your Data Room, But Stole It from Papermark," posted to HN with 372 points and 150 comments, is an allegation that a startup founder passed off code stolen from an open source project as AI generated vibe code. The story originates from a Twitter thread where Papermark's maintainer identified what they claim are direct copies of their code in a competitor's product, with the competitor having publicly claimed the product was built using AI coding assistance. The specific term vibe coding, popularized by Andrei Karpathy earlier this year to describe a workflow where you describe intent and AI generates the implementation, becomes the crux of the accusation. If you're just prompting an AI, why does your output look exactly like our licensed codebase?
The business ethics dimension here is significant. Papermark is an open source project with a specific license. The HN thread includes detailed discussion of what the license terms actually require in terms of attribution and source disclosure. The accusation isn't just that Nico copied code, it's that he misrepresented the provenance of his work in ways that constitute both license violation and potential fraud with investors. If you're raising money on the premise that your AI-generated codebase represents original capability and it turns out to be copied from an existing project, that's a material misrepresentation to investors.
The HN community response was nuanced. There were people who thought the accusation was clearly supported by the evidence, people who thought it was premature without more technical analysis, and a thoughtful contingent who argued that the real problem isn't this individual case, but a broader incentive structure, where "I built this with AI" has become a status claim that's very hard to verify. When the output is code, code is reproducible and inspectable. But when the output is a design, a business strategy, or a market analysis, the same dynamic exists without the same verifiability.
The "you can't unit test for taste" piece from Carl Tryggvason is philosophically adjacent to this. It got 280 points and 128 comments, which suggests it touched a nerve. The argument is that software quality has dimensions, particularly aesthetic and experiential ones, that are fundamentally not amenable to automated testing. You can write tests for correctness, for performance, for security, but whether something feels right to use, whether the abstractions are elegant, whether the code is readable, those require human judgment that can't be formalized into a test suite.
The timing of that piece alongside the Nico or Papermark story is interesting. One of the concerns about AI-generated code in production is exactly this taste problem. AI code generation can produce code that passes tests, that's formally correct, that even performs well, but that lacks the coherence and intentionality that characterizes well-designed software. The tests can pass, and the product can still feel like it was assembled rather than designed.
Open Knowledge, the show HN entry for an open-source AI-first alternative to Obsidian and Notion, generated 289 points and 142 comments. The project is built around the idea that a knowledge management tool should treat AI as a first-class citizen in the information architecture, not as a bolt-on feature. The HN discussion included interesting debate about whether the current crop of AI-integrated note-taking tools is genuinely useful or whether it's mostly a productivity theater. Impressive demos that don't change how people actually work.
The Zig programming language devlog entry about new Bitcast semantics and LLVM backend improvements is more technically narrow but important for the systems programming community. Bitcast in Zig is the operation that reinterprets the raw bytes of one type as another type. It's the kind of low-level operation that's genuinely necessary for embedded systems programming, protocol parsing, and graphics code. But that's historically been a source of undefined behavior in C and C++. Zig's approach to making Bitcast well-defined while still allowing the underlying bit manipulation is a meaningful improvement in the language's safety story. The 125 HN comments included several from people contributing to the Zig compiler, discussing the trade-offs in the LLVM backend changes specifically.
The game where you play the OS, the You're the OS project, is both an educational tool and, reading the HN thread, something that a surprising number of experienced developers said they wished had existed when they were learning. You play as an operating system scheduler, making decisions about process allocation, memory management, and I or O event handling under time pressure. It maps the abstract concepts of operating systems coursework onto a decision-making game with immediate feedback. The 226 upvotes and 43 comments skewed heavily toward educators and bootcamp instructors excited about using it as a teaching tool.
And the Libre Barcode Project, a collection of free open-source barcode fonts available for anyone to use without restriction, is exactly the kind of infrastructure project that most people never think about until they need it and can't find a clean open-source option. The 173 upvotes tell you that there's a real audience for this, probably developers who've hit licensing walls when trying to generate barcodes for physical product projects.
Now, Marcus wants to push back on something, and I think it's worth doing this properly. The confident claim this week, the one the HN community and the tech press have largely converged on, is that Apple's AI-first chip strategy is the right move. The M7 jump, the neural engine investment, the inference-first architecture. Everybody seems to agree this is where Apple should be going. So let's stress test that.
The counterargument starts with a question. What happens if on-device AI inference turns out to be less important than cloud-side model capability? The current consensus assumes that running sophisticated models locally, for privacy, for latency, for offline access, is going to be a decisive consumer preference. But there's a plausible world where the models that matter most are too large and too rapidly evolving to run on consumer hardware. Period. GPT-5 level capability might require data center scale for the foreseeable future. And if that's true, the consumer hardware battle is being fought on the wrong front.
The historical parallel I keep thinking about is the battle over local storage versus cloud storage in the early 2010s. Local storage capacity kept getting marketed aggressively. More gigabytes, faster SSDs, right up until streaming and cloud sync made local storage capacity largely irrelevant for most consumer use cases. The technical capability was real, but the use case it was optimized for turned out not to be the dominant one.
For Apple's M7 bet to be wrong, you'd need a few things to be true simultaneously. First, the models that consumers actually care about would need to be fundamentally too large for on-device deployment at acceptable accuracy levels. Second, connectivity would need to remain ubiquitous and fast enough that cloud latency is not a meaningful friction. Third, consumers would need to be sufficiently comfortable with cloud-side AI processing that privacy concerns don't drive meaningful preference for local processing. None of those are unreasonable assumptions. They describe today's reality fairly well.
So what do we watch for? The signal I'd look for is Apple's own usage data on which Apple Intelligence features are actually being used versus which are being enabled but ignored. If the most used features are the ones that could run in the cloud anyway, and the local inference-only features have low adoption, that would suggest the M7's neural engine investment is solving a problem users don't actually have. Apple doesn't publish that data publicly, but you can sometimes infer it from developer API adoption patterns and third-party app behavior.
The second signal is what happens to competing platforms that don't make the same bet. If Qualcomm's inference-heavy Snapdragon devices drive materially better AI experiences that users notice and prefer, Apple's strategy looks prescient. If the Snapdragon advantage is only visible in benchmarks and not in daily use, that tells you the whole on-device inference arms race might be ahead of what the software ecosystem actually needs.